Well, I'm back from Israel, live in studio. We've got you covered from anti-Semitism to the Grammys.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it is great to be sitting back in my studio with our team here in the States. Just got back from Israel yesterday. Oh, about lunchtime, arrived at my home. So it's a delight to be back with you. Time difference, 7 hours. So that would mean 10 in the evening Israel time. But everything should go well. If I forget my name or something, just attribute it to jet lag. But I think we're okay. Welcome to the broadcast. Michael Brown, yes, glad to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. For all of our friends who were in Israel on this tour, but just a wonderful tour. I was so blessed by our time together and heard great, great reports from the folks on the tour with me. But if you happen to be listening, if you're maybe taking the day off and listening or watching, blessings to you. I hope you get right back on schedule. All right. A lot to talk about. The Grammy Awards took place last night. I didn't watch the show. I don't normally watch those kind of shows. But anyway, I did see today a number of quotes about the power of music and different performers talking about that. Later in the show, I want to revisit that subject, share some of my favorite quotes from my new book, The Power of Music, God's Call to Change the World One Song at a Time, came out just a few weeks ago. We'll talk about that a little later in the show. My friend Larry Tomczak is going to call in with a few thoughts as well. We'll talk about world missions. Say, where's that coming from? You'll find out a bit later in the show. But first, let's start with a focus on anti-Semitism, the rising tide of anti-Semitism. Now, look, I am aware that people who have been maligned, mistreated, misunderstood, people who have been lied about, people who have suffered a lot just because of who they are, they can get paranoid. That's fully understandable. You've had a lot of bad things happen to you. A lot of people betray you. A lot of people take advantage of you. And someone comes along with a great deal that's just going to help you. You're a little skeptical because you've been burned. So I understand that as a people, we Jews have often been burned and we have often been persecuted and we have often been driven out of countries and we have often been put to the sword and we have often been lied about. I am working daily, just about done now, editing an updated and revised edition of Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, which has been translated into more languages than any book I have written. Came out in 92 and has been continuously in print, but I've spent a lot of time updating, revising, adding lots of actual additional quotes and anecdotes and references, and I think it's going to be sharper and more powerful than ever. And part of what I've done is updated the data about anti-Semitism. Because Our Hands Are Stained with Blood tells the story of the church's persecution of the Jewish people over the centuries and wrong theology that led to that and media bias and lies about Israel, et cetera, et cetera. So I've been looking at this a lot. And I want to say plainly, without fear of contradiction, that anti-Semitism continues to rise in America. Thankfully, Jewish people have a lot of favor in America. Thankfully, there is a lot of solidarity with the nation of Israel in America. But if you look at the parties right now, the Republican Party, much, 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 much stronger, much, much stronger on standing with Israel than the Democrats. I mean, markedly, 2-1, 3-1 difference in terms of data, relevant data. And it's not always been like that, but that is the case right now. Not only so, but there are two new congressmen, Muslim women, who have been outspoken at times against Israel, with some pretty ugly quotes, and now one so ugly that House Democrats and congressional leaders are calling for an apology publicly, calling out a colleague. It doesn't happen that often, but lines have been crossed. So there remains a lot of favor on Israel and the Jewish people in America, but let's not deceive ourselves. There is something supernatural behind anti-Semitism. There is something demonic behind anti-Semitism. I've done lectures at college campuses, including Yale at Columbia, talking about this very subject, the demonic roots of anti-Semitism, and saying you cannot simply explain it based on economic situations or spiritual situations or scapegoating theories or whatever it is. The only way you can fully explain the world phenomenon of anti-Semitism through history, the world's longest hatred, the world's most widespread hatred, the world's most irrational hatred. The only way you can fully explain it is by recognizing there is a demonic desire to wipe out the Jewish people, the Messiah's own people, and those who must welcome the Messiah back. So let me give you an example. White supremacists and black supremacists both unite together in their hatred of Israel and their esteem for Adolf Hitler. I have numerous quotes documenting that in Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, but I updated it with quotes from 2018. One of them from Louis Farrakhan saying, Jews are termites. He said, I'm not anti-Semite, I'm anti-termite. What do you do with termites? You exterminate termites. Everyone knew what Farrakhan was saying, just as the Nazis had likened Jews to parasites. Farrakhan likened them to termites. And then, what, less than 2 weeks later, a white supremacist burst into the synagogue in Pittsburgh and cold blood mows down 11 people. All right, so let's get this straight. Black supremacists, white supremacists united in hatred of the Jewish people. It's no coincidence. Check out this editorial from Brett Stevens in the New York Times. Brett Stevens, New York Times op-ed. My friend Rabbi Shmuley Boteach sent out an email telling everyone to read it. The progressive assault on Israel. He said a movement that can detect a racist dog whistle from miles away is strangely deaf when it comes to some of the barking on its own side of the fence. And then look at what he says. Look at what he says. Wanted to scroll down there. We just lost that article. He talks about at a recent major, not that quote, didn't want that. He talks about a major event, a major gay rights conference. All right, so these are LGBTQ activists. And what are they chanting? Here you go. It happened again last month in Detroit. Pro-Palestinian demonstrators seized the stage of the National LGBTQ Task Force Marquee Conference. Right, this is one of the big gay events in the year. All right, big gay activist events called Creating Change. And it demanded a boycott of Israel. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, they chanted, the tediously maligned, thinly veiled call to end Israel as a Jewish state, because from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free means no more Israel. They were met with sustained applause by the audience at what is the largest annual conference of LGBTQ activists in the United States. Conference organizers did nothing to stop the disruption or disavow the demonstrators. All right. What's the point in bringing that up? Why LGBTQ activists? Why are they anti-Israel? Why are they so militantly pro-Palestinian that they want to see the end of Israel as a nation? Again, if it's from the river, from the Jordan River to the sea, the Mediterranean Sea, what's in between? What is in between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea? A country called Israel. No more. No. Not if these activists have their way with that chant. Get rid of Israel. That's it.
Well, it's not saying kill all Jews worldwide.
Oh, no, just get rid of the Jews in Israel, the 6 million plus Jews in Israel. So here you have yet another example. Black supremacists, white supremacists, gay activists. Now, some of the leaders in the Women's March, what do they have in common? Anti-Semitism. It continues to be a rising tide, not only around the world, but in America. For years now, it has been reported that the worldwide levels of anti-Semitism have been just as high as they were immediately before the Holocaust. You have to understand, when that many people feel that way about other people. All you need is this one little thing to spark it. One little thing to spark a massive fire. One little lie. Economic collapse, the Jews get blamed. Something else happens, the Jews get blamed. Something else goes wrong, the Jews get blamed. The next thing, boom, it explodes. Okay, Fox News reports what is going on with Sudanese-born Muslim Ilhan Omar. Her AIPAC tweet sparks condemnation, including from Chelsea Clinton. And what's the background to this? The background is that she made the accusation. It's all about the Benjamins, meaning the Benjamin Franklins, meaning it's all about the money. It's all about the money, okay? Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota sparked backlash Sunday evening from members of both parties, including former First Order Chelsea Clinton, after she accused a prominent lobbying group of paying members of Congress to support Israel, okay? So the question was, well, who's Congress getting paid off? Is that it? Congress is getting paid off? But by whom? Who's involved? And she posts AIPAC, which is a group of Americans and political leaders and others in grassroots standing with Israel, standing with the Jewish people, and lobbying Congress for Israel-related causes. There are all types of groups like this lobbying Congress for all their causes. AIPAC is very powerful in America. So Batya Ungar Sargon, who is the opinion editor for Forward Magazine, a former newspaper, said, would love to know who Ilhan thinks is paying American politicians to be pro-Israel, though I think I can guess. Bad form, Congresswoman. That's the second anti-Semitic trope you've tweeted. Her answer, AIPAC, I'll tell you who's paying off Congress. So Congress is not standing with Israel because of Israel's democratic values, because of Israel as a strategic partner in the Middle East, because of the history of the Middle East after the Holocaust, before and after the Holocaust, the reestablishing of the state of Israel, the important alliance that we have with Israel, Israel's human rights record compared to others in the region. No, Congress is standing with Israel because people are getting paid off by the Jews. Paid off by the Jews. That's what Ilhan Omar is saying. And now even Democrat leaders are saying, you need to apologize. We'll tell you what Nikki Haley said about this when we come back.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Listen, there is always going to be what I feel the default state, the natural state of things, that human beings are going to be anti-Semitic. It's just part of fallen human nature, part of demonic strategy. Just like human beings by nature are going to be selfish and human beings by nature are going to have various bad qualities along with good qualities. I just feel that the default setting in human beings is anti-Semitism. So without God's intervention, that is something that we will see repeated time and time again. So Nikki Haley, our previous ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, said this: to see this at the UN was a fight every day. And by the way, she was amazing in her pro-Israel statements and calling out the hypocrisy of the UN. This cannot, all caps, cannot be tolerated in our own Congress by anyone of either party. In a time of increased anti-Semitism, we all must be held to account. No excuses, no space for hate, no tolerance for anti-Semitism. What is happening with people? Yeah, good for Nikki Haley calling out Ilhan Omar. And look, I'm glad that someone could come over from Sudan. I'm glad that a Muslim woman could find a future here in America and let people vote. Let people vote. There's no religious test, right? This is the way it's come down. It may have meant something originally. In other words, that you had to prove yourself in a certain positive way religiously. But no, there's no religious test. You can be Catholic or Protestant. You can be Jewish. You can be Buddhist, Muslim. You can be Hindu. You can be atheist. You can serve in our government. Now there's the reverse religious test. If you are religious, people are going to come against you. If you're going to be a judge and you have religious beliefs, oh, that's bad. Unless they're liberal religious beliefs, which is great. But in point of fact, good for her that America, the land of opportunity, she found the opportunity and she's been elected as a House representative. Fine. Now let her be held accountable as such. So Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats put out a statement. Nancy Pelosi said, in our conversation today, Congresswoman Omar and I agreed that we must use this moment to move forward as we reject anti-Semitism in all forms. I want to hear it out of the mouth of Ilhan Omar. Here's the Democratic leadership statement on the anti-Semitic comments of Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. So notice they are labeling them as anti-Semitic. And can we scroll down on that or no? Here's what they said. Anti-Semitism must be called out, confronted, and condemned whenever it is encountered without exception. We are and will always be strong supporters of Israel in Congress because we understand that our support is based on shared values and strategic interests. Legitimate criticism of Israel's policies is protected by the values of free speech and democratic debate that the United States and Israel share. But Congresswoman Omar's use of anti-Semitic tropes and prejudicial accusations about Israel's supporters is deeply offensive. We condemn these remarks and we call upon Congresswoman Omar to immediately apologize for these hurtful comments. As Democrats and as Americans, the entire Congress must be fully engaged in denouncing and rejecting all forms of hatred, racism, prejudice, and discrimination wherever they are encountered. Good. Good statement, Democrats. Appreciate you doing that, speaking up. Well, they just did it because they had to. Listen, I'm not going to judge why political leaders do what they do. I am going to call them out for doing what's wrong and commend them for doing what's right. Glad they're doing this. We shall see where this goes. But this is not isolated, and I'm not expecting it to go away quickly. Now, you might say, Mike Brown, you're paranoid. You're paranoid. Well, if you think that way, you don't know me, because I live with a sense of God's favor on my life. I live with a sense of God's blessing. I live with a sense of, if God is for me, who can be against me? I live with a sense of literally feeling bad for people who oppose me because I'm so confident on God's grace in my life. I feel bad for them. So it's going to be hard to find a less paranoid person than me. I mean, people close to me know they have to make sure that I'm aware of a real problem or real danger because I tend to believe the best and expect the best and think the best. All right. But having said that, I'm also a realist. As I have been revising and updating Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, due out, the new edition just found out from the publisher, September 17th of this year. So if you haven't read the book yet, wait. If you have to read it now, fine. Otherwise, wait a few months for the revised edition to come out. So in the book, I document some of the crazy anti-Semitic attacks from, quote, Christian writers. And some of them, aside from the horrific anti-Semitism, you would say what they believe and preach is the gospel. And in other words, they hold to the fundamentals of the faith and they share many values that we share. I'm not going to mention the author of these quotes. In my opinion, he could be the most prolific Christian anti-Semite today. I don't doubt his profession of faith. I say that it is contradicted, though, by what he's written. I'm not mentioning names now because I'm going to contact him and let him know at some point that I'm going to be addressing these things very publicly and very vocally and invite him to come on the air and discuss our differences. But let me just read a couple of quotes for you from this author. It's a contemporary author. Of all the diseased schools of racial supremacism, I'm convinced that the Jewish specimen is the most evil and most threatening to the lives, bodies, and eternal destinies of humankind. Let me read that again from a concerned Christian author. of all the disease schools of racial supremacism. I am convinced that the Jewish specimen is the most evil and most threatening to the lives, bodies, and eternal destinies of humankind. Okay, one more quote from the same author. Zionism and its accompanying religious disease, Judaism, are the champions of all time in terms of the total number of innocent men, women, and children being imprisoned in concentration camps, beaten, bludgeoned, raped, robbed, humiliated, and unmercifully slaughtered. Oh, and he's got book after book with trash like this, with unmitigated trash like that, with libelous accusations. And he and a whole bunch of other people believe them. So I'm not being paranoid. I'm just telling you that that is the reality. I started a poll on Twitter a couple hours back asking folks if they thought anti-Semitism was on the rise, or are we overreacting to a straight comment here and there? Is it on the rise in America, or are you not sure? And someone in response, a woman in response, tweeted back, and what she said was this. Kai, if you can grab that last tweet. She tweeted back with an anti-Semitic comment. And she said it's not a matter of anti-Semitism. Not a matter of anti-Semitism. She said it is a matter of, it is a matter of reacting against those in power. So in other words, people not being anti-Semitic. Here's what she wrote. Miss Can Patriot. And I did block her. I told her. She wrote after this and challenged me. And I said, hey, I'm not going to respond. Blocked her. And by anti-Semitism, you mean disdain for those in power? Yes, it's rising due to their disastrous policies. So Jew hatred is rising because Jews control the world. And they're messing everything up and people are reacting to it. And then she has a link to Stephen Anderson, King James only fanatic Stephen Anderson, who is a classic anti-Semite as well, to one of his videos, The Jews Are the Most Wicked Nation. Stephen Anderson, who rejoices if homosexuals are killed, says the government should be killing them. Stephen Anderson, that's what she links to. And she identifies as a patriot. So I responded. She responded back with a further challenge. Well, then refute what's in his video. The refutate. First, I'm not going to dignify it right now by interacting with it. But second, if I take the time to interact, it's facts versus fiction. His video being fiction, an exaggeration, and classic anti-Semitic judgments. But friends, this is no surprise. This has been around for a long time. It has been around a long time. It's going to continue until Jesus returns. God has made promises to the Jewish people, not because of our goodness, but because of his goodness. He has kept us not because of our faithfulness, but because of his faithfulness. The only reason we still exist on the planet is because of the grace and love and mercy of God. And by the way, if you're a follower of Jesus, you're a Christian, that should encourage you. Because if God kept his promises to Israel, he's going to keep his promises to the church. But if Satan can wipe out the Jews, since God said in the word that they will always exist as a nation, if Satan can wipe them out, then he makes God into a liar. Not only so, but the Jewish people still play a key role in world redemption, and they are the ones who must welcome the Messiah back. And if Satan can wipe out the Jewish people, then he can thwart the plan of God. Ain't gonna happen. Ain't gonna happen. Sorry if I just influenced your child with bad grammar. It is not going to happen. God will keep his promises. God will preserve. God will bless. But the reason that Jews have been so hated in world history cannot be explained by our failures as human beings and our shortcomings and us being like other people all around the world. No, it is ultimately explained by this. Satan wants to wipe us out. He won't. All right, we're going to change subjects when we come back. Stay right here. Shake the nation, change the world. Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I got saved, came to faith as a hippie rock drummer. I'm going to talk to a friend in a moment who came to faith as a drummer with a group called The Lost Souls. Talk about a prophetic message that wasn't meant to be a prophetic message. This is Michael Brown, back from Israel, got in yesterday. Delighted to be back with you here in studio, 866-348-7884. Just been talking about anti-Semitism in the first half hour of the broadcast. For all those joining us now, we're switching subjects with the Grammys taking place last night. A lot of talk about the power of music, my new book out on the power of music. Thought it'd be good to talk to my friend Larry Tomczak about this, as he's been watching the culture, watching how culture influences kids and media entertainment. And there's no medium more powerful than the medium of music. There is a famous quote from Andrew Fletcher. It's come down in various forms over the years, but what Fletcher said is this in the 1700s. I don't care who makes your laws, writes your laws. I care about who writes your songs. Understanding the power of a song to change hearts, minds, and then out of that, laws will change. Hey, Larry, always great to have you on the Line of Fire. Welcome back.
Well, Mike, thank you so much. It's an honor, and welcome back from Israel.
Thanks, man. Hey, Larry, how did you guys come up with the name The Lost Souls?
Well, you know, I look back, Mike, and I there we were. You talk to the providence of God. I'm in Cleveland, Ohio. That's where rock and roll, the term was coined in 1955. That's where the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is. And I was just following like you. I was lost. And we gathered after we saw the Beatles on a television show on a Sunday night. And then the next thing you know, we start taking music lessons. We formed a band, and we were pretty big in the city. There's other names that I could mention, but we were big. But you know what? We were lost. We were in darkness, confusion. And then next thing you know, we transitioned, you, me, and people like Mike Bickle and Cheyenne and Bob Weiner. And Keith Green. we were being apprehended by the Lord in a supernatural way. And now we know that was the Jesus movement.
Yeah.
But God did a fresh work at that time. Music was an integral part of it, but you and I and multitudes are believing for another great awakening, a move of God, a Jesus, whatever you want to call it. And I know we're going to touch on that, a big event that's coming up. But, Mike, I can't tell you, to answer your question, one of us just said, hey, we're a bunch of lost souls. And, well, that sounds like a good name.
So so obviously there was some humor in that, but did you guys feel that you were lost? Were you conscious of being lost?
Well, Mike, when I think of it, I was reading in devotions this morning in Ephesians, just, you know, the spirit of disobedience at work in an unbeliever and without hope and living in darkness. And I was, I mean, I think of music I played and songs we played and music I was listening to and the themes of it. There was a spiritual fog, a darkness, but I thank God to this day, my car breaks down. I'm driving at the age of 20 to Cleveland State University, and a black minister picks me up, gives me an invitation to a inner city church. And Mike, that was the beginning of it for me. I mean, I went, I did it because he was kind enough to give me a lift, and I heard the gospel, and I started to meet others through divine appointments. People shared the gospel, and eventually, shortly thereafter, I yielded my life to Jesus, and I found myself catapulted into a move of God that was taking place in America, and people were being converted. People were radically sharing their faith. Music was birthed in creative ways. Mm. And Mike, my passion is, oh God, with so many today, may we experience another intervention of God.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Yet I know there's non-negotiables and essentials to see that happen, but that's what we're believing for, Mike.
And Larry, you've written about music, the power of music, and what kids listen to and the influence it has. Of course, hip-hop, rap, massively influential in America today. In fact, at the Grammys last night, I was just reading about Drake getting up, and there are others, artists who wouldn't come, hip-hop artists, because they feel their genre as powerful, influential as it is, hasn't been sufficiently recognized in the Grammys. And he got up to basically say, well, you don't need the awards if you have people coming out and following you. That's all you need. But I think many times we fail to recognize how influential music can be. Parents don't realize the lyrics kids listen to, the power that it has. All of the YouTube videos that have been watched the most, I mean, not millions of times, not hundreds of millions of times, but several billion times, specific videos, they're virtually all music videos. There's a reason for this. So open this up a little bit. What folks are listening to, what they should be concerned about in terms of music today?
Well, I'm just trying to kind of wave a banner and say parents and pastors, youth leaders, and young people, you know, when we say we're following Jesus, we have a directive in Scripture in 1 Thessalonians that says, test everything, hold on to the good, and avoid every kind of evil. And so we have this directive to steer clear of that which is detrimental to our walk with God. It can be a harmful influence. And so today, you know, just like we're saying, folks, Netflix, watch out. There's pornography a click away. Or iPhone, watch out. We're not entering fear, but we've got to be vigilant. Our adversary, the devil, prowls like a roaring lion. And so today, you know, anything that would be, or anyone that would be condoning, let's say, violence or illicit sex, rejection of authority, sexuality, drugs, profanity, immodesty, the whole LGBTQ propaganda, the occult, it needs to be avoided. And we can't be afraid. And I know I've talked with parents and they say, well, look, hey, we all have our music and everything like that. And, you know, some parents will say, look, I'm not into hip hop or rap or that kind of stuff. You know, I kind of like Elvis, Metallica, the Stones, and so I'm kind of open with my kids, listen to their kind of music. You know, I don't want to be legalistic, but Mike, there is such danger today by what's out there. I can tell you this: I don't buy Rolling Stone magazine, but this month I just picked it up on the stand. I just flipped through it, and there's a 7-page spread on a platinum-selling artist, Tekashi 69. I believe I never even heard of him. Wears a $300,000 necklace. He's got 15 hits. He's got 15 million Instagram followers. His music has been streamed 2.6 billion times. They call him the face of a generation. Well, he professes to be a Christian, just like bisexual Lady Gaga. Well, I read the rest of the article, and in the end there, it's telling how this guy has put forth pornographic videos, did a sex tape with a 13-year-old girl, and he was arrested. He's currently in prison right now, serving 32 years, and he's accused of felony, drug dealing, armed robbery, 2 attempted murders. And I think, my God, young people are listening to this, and they don't realize it, and we've got to monitor and stay, keep our guard up, because it's not the innocent stuff that has been in the past. And, you know, I don't know if everybody's aware, but this year everybody's excited in the music room. They're saying, Woodstock. 50th anniversary is coming up. I think it's in August, and there's a romantic recollection of that event in New York, and there's 400,000 young people and the musical creativity. But I saw a documentary on this once, and there was unrestrained nudity, promiscuity, free-flowing drugs. So many of the performers met tragic deaths. So I try with you to alert people, not to put fear in people's hearts, but to say, we've got to be careful about the music that we're listening to our eye gate, ear gate, watching, and also with our children, giving them creative alternatives. And I'll say this lastly, you know, when I first came to the Lord to show innocence and ignorance, I remember there was the Beatles were so big, and then George Harrison came out with a song of the Beatles, My Sweet Lord.
Right.
And I purchased it. I thought, this is great. And I'm singing it for weeks about my sweet Lord. And then one day some guy said, hey, do you know what you're singing about? And I said, yeah, Jesus. He said, no. He gave me the rude awakening. He said, that's a song that's invoking and celebrating Lord Krishna.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, yi. So that's, you know, and all I can say is no fear, but we have a better way. And we need to be careful. And my wife even told me this the other day, and I had to look it up. I didn't realize it. She said, well, Larry, remember when Moses came down from the mount? He was so angry when he heard the people singing. He saw the idolatry. People were dancing. And she said, well, you know what? The people were naked. They didn't even have clothes on. I said, wait, where'd you get that? And I looked it up in King James, Numbers 32:25. So that kind of atmosphere, that can be replicated today. And, you know, if you saw any of the Grammys, there's so much there that is idolatry. And even though they sanitize a lot of it, I just say, my God, I had to turn away at one time. My wife said, man, maybe we need to just turn this off. And it wasn't like it was raunch filth, but we've got to be on guard because, as you say, music is a powerful medium. And both of us know what it's like when we're on that percussion throne and we're playing those drums, how young people especially can be seduced.
Yeah, really. And by the way, I think you'd meant Exodus 32:25. You'd said Numbers. But yeah, King James does say naked. Other translations say unrestrained. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that when you think of Woodstock, it's the epitome of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Those things have gone hand in hand. The counterculture revolution could not have happened without music. Revolutionary changes continue to happen in negative ways or positive ways with the help of music. Hey, Larry, we've just got a minute and a half before the break, but what is happening just in a few days in Orlando?
All right. Mike, this is so critical. Hey, everybody, listen. I'm going, my daughter, February the 23rd. You can look at the send.org. It's a massive gathering of individuals that are coming. We think probably 60,000. And Youth with a Mission and Circuit Riders and Christ for All Nations. But we're going to gather there for a day of prayer and worship and impartation, because we believe as Billy Graham left the scene, there's a mantle coming afresh on the church, and it's an opportunity to receive fresh vision, impartation, and be, you know, commissioned. And it's going to be a great event. I just want to extend the invite. It's going to be at the Camping World Stadium in Orlando, February 23rd. That's a Saturday. There's a shift coming. And those of us that say we need another fresh move of God in this nation, another Jesus movement, hey, consider, pray about coming and being a part of what's going to be a historic event in Orlando on February 23rd.
All right, friends, and the whole goal is to get people out preaching the gospel, send them out to evangelize, get them on the mission field. Hey, Larry, great being with you again. May the Lord's grace and blessing be on you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike.
All right. God bless.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, maybe you heard read excerpts of an interview Justin Bieber did in Vogue magazine together with his wife, Haley. And talked about how he had abstained from sex for a year before getting married, and then pushed the marriage, want to get married quickly so he didn't fall into sin with Haley. They saved sex for marriage, etc. Obviously, if you're praying for, you know, a lot of people pray for, but if you think about them with influence that they have on young people, you pray for them to continue to know the Lord more deeply and experience deeper transformation and be better examples of purity and morality. And you also are glad to hear every good report or positive report because they're influential, especially, Justin Bieber, tremendously influential, dresses a certain way, kids want to dress like that, acts a certain way, kids want to act like that. Well, maybe they'll be encouraged to consider abstinence. But I have an article that I wrote about that will be up on the stream in about 10, 15 minutes. We'll be tweeting it out, posting it on Facebook as well. But how about we give away a free copy or two of my brand new book, The Power of Music. Don't call yet. Here's the number, though, when it is time to call, but don't call yet. 866-348-7884. 866-34-TRUTH. So here's the deal. I really felt moved on by the Lord to write this, to get the book into the hands of every music lover, every worship lover, every songwriter, every worship leader, every lyricist, every musician to say, let's look through history. Classical music, rock music, hip-hop, heavy metal, civil rights music. I mean, let's look through history, good, bad. Let's see how music's been used. Let's understand how it affects the whole brain. It affects the brain in a unique way. And then let's grab hold of this as an incredibly powerful revolutionary tool. Join together with the right lyrics, how it can be used in extraordinary ways. Let's take hold of the power of music afresh and use it as a world-changing tool by God's grace, and deepen our worship and our theology by what we sing and what we take in through music. So I want to share a few of my favorite quotes that I incorporated into the Power of Music book, and there are a ton of them. But I just posted on the Ask Dr. Brown website last night 10 of my favorite quotes, some of the most eye-opening. So let us make this caller number 8. 866-348-7884. Caller number 8. You get a free copy of The Power of Music. So here are some of my favorite quotes. I mentioned Andrew Fletcher in the last segment. Let me make the songs of a nation, and I care not who makes its laws. Let me make the songs of a nation, I care not who makes its laws. So that quote, you've seen it maybe in different forms here and there, but that's the original quote. Let me make the songs of a nation, I care not who makes its laws. That's how powerful music can be in terms of changing society. Now, Woody Guthrie, the father of Arlo Guthrie, a folk protest icon, listen to what he wrote to President Harry Truman in 1948. I ask you, Mr. President, please let everybody sing all night long, love songs, work songs, new hope songs. This will cure every soul in our jail, asylum, and sick in our hospital, too. Try it and see. I know I am a prophet singer. What a fascinating quote. Now, number one, we do have a winner. Sorry for our call screen here. We do have a winner. I'm going to give away one more book before we're done, but we do have a winner. Thanks. So I should have said that a little while ago. What's so interesting, yeah, there's hyperbole in what Woody Guthrie said, for sure. But there's recognition that music does affect the mind, it does affect the emotions, it does affect the body, it does affect the mentality. And if you get people singing and then singing the right song, think of what can happen. And here you have a guy who is not a follower of Jesus, full of the Spirit, or connected well to Scripture, but he identified himself as a prophet singer. That's how he identified himself. You want to hear some of a little bit more hyperbole? Little Richard said this. I believe my music is the healing music. I believe my music can make the blind see, the lame walk, the deaf and dumb hear and talk, because it inspires and uplifts people. It regenerates the ears, makes the liver quiver, so the bladder spatter and the knees freeze. I'm not conceited either. Okay. We've got some hyperbole there. But it is an exaggeration based on truth. It is an exaggeration based on just how powerful music can be. Nothing moves us like music. Now, how about what rock stars were doing in rock bands? One of the most radical was MC5, managed by John Sinclair. He wrote the White Panther Manifesto in 1968. Listen to what he said. 1968, right in the height of the counterculture revolution. Rock and roll music is the spearhead of our attack because it is so effective and so much fun. We have developed organic, high-energy guerrilla bands who are infiltrating the popular culture and destroying millions of minds in the process. With our music and our economic genius, we plunder the unsuspecting straight world for money and the means to carry out our program and revolutionize its children at the same time. Wow. What an insightful quote, and how accurate, that music was being used to revolutionize young people in the 1960s, and for the most part, in a very negative way. I was one of them, revolutionized by music. That's why I ended up being a heavy drug user. Without the influence of rock music, I don't see any way that that would have come into my life. The way I was living and what my interests were, it was the music interest and the example of the musicians and the stars and all of this that, I am responsible for my actions, yes. But this helped open the door. These contributed to it. All right, one more giveaway, caller number 9. Caller number 9, 866-348-7884. You get a free copy of The Power of Music. If you haven't ordered it, you can order it on our website together with some great music interviews, or just go to Amazon and order it. If you have the book and you've been blessed by it, please be sure to post a review on Amazon where others will read it. 866-348-7884, caller number 10. I've got time for a couple more quotes. So you want to know what some of the other rock stars talked about, what they understood was happening at their rock concerts? Jimi Hendrix, lots of whom I saw twice, first in 1968, and it was greatly impacting for me in a negative way, with all appreciation for his musical genius. Lots of young people now feel they're not getting a fair deal, so they revert to something loud or harsh, almost verging on violence. It's more than music. It's like church, like a foundation for the lost or potentially lost. Remember, Larry Tomczak said his band was called The Lost Souls. You had people that were lost going to these concerts, but they didn't get more found in the process. They got more lost in the process. And if you want more proof of this, Jim Morrison, the leader of The Doors and the poet lyricist of The Doors, said this: "Think of us as erotic politicians. I am interested in anything about revolt, disorder, chaos, especially the activity that has no meaning." Yeah. These were some of the icons. Morrison, Joplin, Hendrix, all dying at the age of 27, 1970-1971. How about the way we're wired? Oliver Sacks, in his book on The Power of Music, said, "We humans are a musical species no less than a linguistic one." And we do have a winner, thank you. "We humans are a musical species no less than a linguistic one." In other words, just as we are programmed for speech. And that's why little babies, without being taught grammar and vocabulary and all, they just being around people, they learn to speak. We have been wired for language. We have also been wired for music. God made us a musical species. John Wesley attended the premiere performance of Handel's Messiah. And when he was there, this is what he said: "I doubt if that congregation was ever so serious as a sermon as they were during this performance." And then, statement from biography.com about Amazing Grace. It's probably the most beloved hymn of the last two centuries. "The soaring spiritual describing profound religious elation is estimated to be performed 10 million times annually and has appeared on over 11,000 albums. It was referenced in Harriet Beecher Stowe's anti-slavery novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin, and had a surge of popularity during two of nation's greatest crises, the Civil War and the Vietnam War." And of course, the author of the hymn, Amazing Grace, John Newton, a former slave trader. Hence, "That's a wretch I was." Yeah, he recognized it deeply. And lastly, Psalm 96:1. "Oh, sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord all the earth." Those are just 10 out of dozens and dozens and dozens of quotes and a ton of scripture that we cover at the end of the book on The Power of Music. So we wanted to give away a few more copies, but by all means, get a copy yourself. It'll be a journey of exploration, a journey of learning, and a journey of inspiration as you go. Again, the subtitle of the book, Power of Music: God's Call to Change the World One Song at a Time. Let us take hold of The Power of Music in the day after the Grammys. Let's take hold of it in its full revolutionary power, joined with the gospel to impact hearts, minds, lives, and cultures. Back with you tomorrow. Phone lines will be wide open, super wide open.